Tonight on the Midlife Crisis Task Force, we're discussing reboots, and we're talking about what we're reading. Welcome back.
All right, guys. How's everything going this week?
Well, it's going all right. How about you?
Things are just fine. How about with you, Rando?
Things are fine in Rando land.
That's always a good thing.
That's right. I'm glad to hear
the
that.
The sky is blue in Rando land. Sorry, I'll stop now.
Okay.
You sing better than I do, so.
Yeah, definitely sing better than I do, so. You're okay.
You guys must be drunk.
So what do we want to start with tonight?
Well, we're starting, I think, I'd like to go with straight into the reboots, because I think there's a lot of good discussion there, good and bad, on movies that have been made. And we can always question, why did they remake them, or why did they remake them the way they did?
And yeah, yeah.
Some of them surpassed the original, so, I mean, I think that's a good starting point tonight.
Yeah. Now, who wants to go first?
All right, I'll chime in with okay. one that I think is a particularly good reboot.
Okay.
I will go with the recent Casino Royale starring Daniel Craig, a reboot of the James Bond franchise. I think that was very well done.
That was very well done. I really enjoyed that film more than I had enjoyed a Bond film in a while. Haven't seen either of the sequels. I heard the second one was not very good, and the third one got a lot of buzz. I just haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, the third one's supposed to be really good. I haven't seen that one either, so I have to catch up on my movies.
The third one had some significant problems, but it was better than the second one. I will leave it there.
Okay.
I didn't want to see the second one because of the title, Quantum of Solace. I mean, that doesn't make any damn sense.
I'm telling you, they've done these Bond movies for what? How long? 40 years now?
Longer than that.
Maybe even longer? 50 years?
Close to 50,
is it 50 year anniversary?
It has got to be the most successful film franchise ever.
Definitely. Definitely the longest running.
I would think so.
It's definitely closer to 50, maybe closer to 55 or 60. I mean, they predate us, and we're all 42, so.
Yeah, I guess so. Wow. It kind of puts things in perspective with that.
Yeah.
Well, while we're on this subject with the Bond, just a real quick side note, who's everyone's favorite Bond?
Oh, boy.
I have gone back to watch quite a number of them, and even though I like Daniel Craig, at least as far as the Casino Royale with the very visceral action, the more I watch them, the more I like Sean Connery.
I like the first two Sean Connery Bonds a lot. Now,
you're talking about Dr. No?
Dr. No.
Mm-hmm. I can't stand that one anymore. For me, it's the pacing is just so slow. And I think that's what I don't like is. About it.
I mean, I do like him. I grew up with Roger Moore personally.
I think we all did.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and it's hard for me to not say him. But, I mean, for me as a character, I always thought Pierce Brosnan was the perfect person. That he looked like Bond in my head.
Yeah.
I'll put it that way.
I really wish he had gotten to play Bond earlier than he did, because he was supposed to start it back in the 80s, I think, but he was under contract for Remington Steele. They wouldn't let him out to go do it. So he should have done more movies than just the four that he did.
Well, I tell you, if The Living Daylights and License to Kill were going to be his movies, I'm glad they waited. Those sucked. They were terrible.
Yeah, there have been bad movies in that franchise.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
Which technically, those were a reboot from the Roger Moore era.
Yeah. If you want to talk reboots with Bond, hey, we could do a whole show on this. Every time they've changed actors, they've rebooted it. So,
essentially, yes.
Five times now, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's just, it's crazy. I mean, it's a good, I mean, it really, they are hit or miss, but a really good Bond movie is really good.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's just, they are fun.
Yeah.
So, but, okay, I guess, how about you now, Pancho? What's one you want to go with one year?
Well, I grew up with Roger Moore, and I have to stick with him. My dad and I, that was a tradition with him when I was with the two of us when I was growing up, that we would always go see the new Bond movie when it came out. It was one of the first movies I remember the two of us going to see, was For Your Eyes Only. And I have to stick with Roger Moore, because when I think of James Bond, that's who I think of, because that's who I grew up with. So, I get into a lot of arguments about this with people older than me because who find that anybody other than Sean Connery is just sacrilege. Mm-hmm. But, oh, well, that's just my opinion.
Well, that's all right. I mean, I think we all gravitate towards what we grew up with.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
just natural.
Exactly. Now, how about you, Poncho, is one that you like or hate?
One that I like, and I was surprised I like, and we've discussed it already, was the Star Trek reboot that J.J. Abrams did a few years ago. I'm a huge fan of the original Star Trek series, and when I heard they were going back to redo it with a new set of actors, I was like, this is going to suck royally. It was really good. It was really good. If you haven't seen it, I would encourage you to go see it. It was a great movie. It would have been a great movie even if it hadn't been a reboot of an existing franchise. That's the one I'm going to say that I really enjoyed.
I agree with you. That was the one I was going to use, but I'll see if I can't come up with another one here real quick.
Sorry.
Oh, no, it's not a problem at all. Me personally, I don't know. I guess this would be considered a reboot, but the older movies are so far back in time. I don't really know if you can consider this a reboot, but the Sherlock Holmes movies that were made in the last couple of years.
Oh, with Robert Downey Jr.?
With Robert Downey Jr. I enjoyed those.
I've never seen either of them.
They're not... I wouldn't say they're your typical Sherlock Holmes movie. There are aspects that are like some see, but I like different takes on him. That's one of my favorite characters in all of writing is Sherlock Holmes. So, I mean, his take on it, I think, is pretty interesting.
Have you seen the BBC series that's set in the modern day?
No, I have not seen that yet.
Oh, my God.
Is it good?
You gotta watch this. Fan-fucking-tastic.
Really? Okay.
Best Sherlock Holmes I've seen since Jeremy Brett died. For those who don't remember, he was the guy that did it for years on Mystery.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. He was a very good Sherlock.
And to me, is the quintessential Sherlock Holmes. When I read the stories, I read them in his voice.
Right.
I didn't care. I didn't have any interest in seeing the Robert Downey ones because they just weren't. I'm a purist when it comes to Sherlock Holmes. This is again, something from my childhood that I'm really attached to. And again, when I heard they were redoing it in the modern day, the BBC,
right,
I thought this is going to blow. It's just going to blow. It is fantastic. I cannot recommend it highly enough. Randy, if you haven't seen it, I recommend go out and watch it. Fantastic.
Everybody has gone completely batshit over that show. And I'm not saying they're wrong. Don't take it that way. It's just there's something about Holmes. I don't know what it is. I've never really been able to get behind the character. You know, I don't hate him, but I don't like him. I just have this comfortable apathy. And I probably will at some point in time because I've seen other BBC series, recent shows like Luther, and have been, you know, my socks have been officially knocked off. So I probably will catch it at some point in time. It's just lately I feel I have to be in a certain moods for certain things, and the mood just hasn't quite caught me for that one yet.
Yeah, I definitely understand that. I understand.
Okay.
The guy that plays Sherlock Holmes in this series is named Benedict Cumberbatch.
People
That's
love
his real
to
name.
Say his name.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's actually going to be in the new Star Trek film, too.
Yes, he is. I think he's the villain. Yes.
Oh,
and
he's
Smaug. He's doing the voice of Smaug in The Hobbit, whenever they get around to that part of it. But he plays Holmes like a just major asshole.
Thank
Gregory House from the House MD show. Kind of like that, but even more of an asshole. And he does a fantastic job with it. Just really, really good. And the guy that plays Dr. Watson, you might remember him from the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie. He played Arthur Dent in the movie. And he's very sublime and very good. He plays also in The Hobbit. He plays Bilbo Baggins in The Hobbit.
Oh, okay. Alrighty. Yeah.
Heartily recommend it.
All right. I will definitely check it out.
On Netflix.
All right. I will check it out, man. I will take your advice on that one.
Okay. You will thank me later.
All righty. Now, what do we need to do? Now we need to do stinkers, right?
Well, that shouldn't be hard.
Yeah, I'll chime in with this one. I'm going to jump over bad, because I think this is going to be bad, and I'm just going to land right on unnecessary and say RoboCop. There's absolutely no reason to do another RoboCop film. They knocked it out of the park with the original one between Kurtwood Smith and Peter Weller and the overall design of everything. And going for a take of satire, it just, you can't capture that lightning in a bottle again. It was perfect. And why they need to do another reboot is just illustrating Hollywood's bankruptcy of ideas, in my opinion.
That's just what I was about to say, that they've completely run out of ideas. And instead of coming up with something original, they're going to recycle something old.
And well, it's a money grab.
It is a money grab. And it's an attempt to get the younger generation interested in some of this older stuff, because I guess they've perceived notion is that the younger generation doesn't want to watch anything that's older than 5 years. So I don't get it. But
I don't get it either, especially since I've seen the leaked pictures of the new designs. Guy looks like a G.I. Joe movie reject. He doesn't look like a cyborg. He just looks like a dude in a suit. It just looks pathetic to me. I go back and look at those old designs. Peter Weller on that thing, and in that suit, he looks like a machine that's just built to carry the head and whatever's left of that poor sap around. It's just an incredible difference in design.
I think, like you said, it's just strictly a money grab. They're going after a new audience. They're not worrying about... They don't worry about the originals for any of this stuff. I mean...
No.
So, you know, I mean, it's a new generation of moviegoers, and they're just going to tweak it to their taste. I mean, that's just... Unfortunately, that's just a sign of the times for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. I don't think it needs to be done. I mean, that first one was the best one. It's better than any of the sequels, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, I've got another comment I'm going to hold for the end, because I'm curious if you guys mention some of the ones I'm thinking of right now. Let's move along.
Okay.
Okay. Right. Well, okay. How about, Pancho, what about your stinker?
Other than the obvious one, the Star Trek prequel, the Star Wars prequels.
those go without mentioning.
Yeah, I think those are a given. That said, I didn't think the first one was absolutely terrible. If it had removed Jar Jar Binks from the equation, it would have been a better movie. It's definitely the most watchable of those three. They decline in quality precipitously after the first one.
Oh yeah.
I don't know. I've got some major issues of above and beyond Jar Jar Stinks. First of all, I think he started Anakin far, far too young. It's really creepy trying to see a 9-year-old hit on a 14-year-old.
Yes,
that's just
is.
Very creepy. But then he takes the central theme of his whole, or the mysticism, I should say, the central mysticism of his characters, this Force, and it's all based on these microscopic cellular things called midichlorians.
Yeah.
It's basically
midichlorians,
yeah,
yes.
Basically yeah. Saying that the whole power of the Force is a bacterial infection.
Exactly.
That I have a major beef with.
You're but not I'll, the only one.
Yeah, I'll stop
that
there.
That ranks about as high with some people as who shot first.
Yeah, exactly.
I am wearing my Han shot first t-shirt right now, as a matter of fact.
You go, Brando. You go.
Woo-hoo. There you go.
But putting those aside, I'm going to go ahead and admit to say I never saw this movie because I didn't see the point in doing it, and I knew it could never touch the original, which was the Avengers. Not the blockbuster Marvel Comics action movie that came out last year. I'm talking about the British spy series from the 1960s that was made famous by Patrick McNee and... Diana Rigg.
Oh, yep. Diana Rigg, lovely woman.
Oh,
very lovely.
Yes, beautiful woman.
With a James
beautiful
Bond connection, as a matter of fact.
Yes, she married
That's
James
right.
Bond.
That is correct, and on her Majesty's Secret Service.
She was her, right. Mrs. James Bond for all of 5 minutes.
Just about.
Yes, yes. But they remade this in the 90s with Uma Thurman and...
It was Ralph Fiennes, wasn't it?
Ray Fiennes, thank you. His name went out of my head, too. It's been a long week. I'm tired. I didn't want to see this film because the original material, the series, was so good. And there was so much chemistry between Patrick McNee and Diana Rigg. And they were so charming together. There's no way... Well, I wouldn't say there's no way, but it had been really hard to match that on screen. And by what I heard about it from my wife, who did go see it or did watch it on the DVD player, it failed pretty badly to match up to that. And they tried desperately, and it didn't work. So
they cranked that one out around the same time as a bunch of other cinematic turds like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
That's another topic we can go in. Comic movies that were ruined.
Yeah, true. Oh, that would be a good one. Yeah, let's put that one to the list.
I'm adding that to the list right now.
All right. Okay, all right. Lefty, you're up. What do you got?
All right. Well, I got a really, really bad one, but while we were sitting here talking, I thought of another one in my head I want to mention real quick before I go on my main
one.
All
right, go for it.
Did either one of you see Wild Wild West?
Oh! Ow,
I didn't want to watch that either. Oh, the previews hurt.
Movie.
Oh, God.
I've seen it. It is god awful. And I like Kevin Klein. He's in this. He is just, it's like.
And I love Ken Branagh, and he's in that.
Yeah. And it's all embarrassing is what it is. That's the best word I can use to describe that film.
I remember seeing the previews of that and seeing that giant spider that was chasing after. And I'm like, what the fuck is this supposed to be? This is crazy.
Oh, yeah. It's not good.
Not good at all. A lot of people probably haven't seen the TV series. When was that? 50s or 60s?
It was in the 60s. Yeah, it started in black and white, as a matter of fact. So it had to have been in the early 60s.
Mm-hmm. It did have some sci-fi elements to it, even though it was a Western. But, there were no giant mechanical spiders running around.
No. But I just had to throw that in real quick because it just popped in my head. But
that's bad.
My main bad film reboot would be the Peter Jackson King Kong that was made. It made me want to sling shit at the screen because it was so bad.
Crap, flinging audience viewer.
I just wanted to take a big dump in my hand and throw it at the screen because I don't want to reuse the word embarrassing again, but that was just awful. When you have one of the scenes is where the gorilla is ice skating with the main character. there's something wrong with this. I don't know if you two have seen that movie.
I haven't watched that movie on purpose.
Consider yourselves lucky.
That is a movie that is so classic. And yes, it's 70 years old. Almost 80 years old now. It is 80 years old this year. Yeah. 1933 was when it came out. It is 80 years old this year.
Wow.
But it was done so well. I don't see the point in redoing it. I mean, you show that movie to an 8-year-old boy, he's going to love it.
Yeah,
claymation and the effects are cheesy and the acting's bad, but he's going to love it. It's a fantastic movie. Why do you need to redo it? I mean, and this is not the first time they've redone it. I'm not talking about all the god-awful sequels they did, but they remade the actual movie back in 1976. And fun poncho trivia fact, first film I ever saw at the theater.
Really?
My mother and my aunt and uncle took me. I guess they couldn't find anybody to look after me while they went because I would have been 5 years old at the time. But, it was the first movie I ever went to see. I don't remember being scared by it, but I remember King Kong being shown to the audience, and he's inside a giant gas pump. And I remember at 5 years old thinking, what the hell is going on here?
have you seen it since?
I have seen it since. I saw that when I was a kid. Then I saw the original many years later, and I got to thinking, why was he in a gas pump?
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the remake, which probably is better than the one that Peter Jackson did. Sounds like it's better. There's no ice skating anyway.
Oh, the one from the 70s? The ones in the 70s was better. I mean, it was bad, but it was better than the Peter Jackson one. I mean, I don't know why they gave him free reign to make that movie the way they did. Apparently, nobody was screening the film day to day.
I'll give you four words why they let him have free reign. Lord of the Rings. Yes. He could write his own ticket to do anything after that, and that's what he chose to do. So,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
I want to come back to this topic because Lefty, you hit on it squarely on the head. Unnecessary and bad reboots almost any television show that's been remade to a movie has god awful. Starsky and Hutch, yeah. 21 Jump Street, Brady Bunch, Car 54, Where Are You? The list goes on.
Beverly Hillbillies. Beverly Hillbillies.
All this. Even, I mean, the comedy to comedy, that's one thing. But when they take these shows that were essentially dramatic shows and they cast comic leads in them, namely like Starsky and Hutch, and they completely change the tone of the characters in the show. I mean, it's like they're trying to go for the base level toilet humor and trying to obviously grub for money. It's terrible.
Dark Shadows was another one that Tim Burton did recently.
Yeah.
I never saw that one. I like this TV show.
I love the TV show. One of my favorite things growing up was getting to watch that, and I was so excited when I heard they were doing a remake. I mean, though I knew it wasn't gonna compare. And then I watched the trailer, the first 30 seconds, I thought, yes, this is gonna be good. And then it turned into a comedy. And I finished watching it, and I sent it out to several people. I may have included YouTube on it. And I remember the title of the email was, "I will never watch this film."
Oh my.
How about ruining your childhood there?
I don't know why they feel the need to do this. If they're going to pay the money to make this film, then why stick to the tone of the thing that made the source material so great in the first place?
Yeah.
Because, well, I think it's a money grab. B, they have to change it just enough. You know what I mean?
I disagree with that. They don't have to.
Well, they feel like they have
they
to.
They feel like, I agree with that. They feel like they have to. But I'm going to go back on this other thing about comic books. Look at what they did with Sin City.
Oh, that's a good movie.
They did that perfectly. So close to the source material that it was taking a comic book page and bringing it to life. And for the audience that it was targeting, they loved it. I don't think the critics liked it very much, but who gives a shit? but for the audience they were targeting, it worked, and it worked very, very well. And they didn't have to change a thing. Not one.
Well, I don't know. Okay, a good example of stuff that they go overboard and change things. All the Batman movies that were made, not the more recent ones, but I'm talking about
The Tim Burton.
He should never have had that.
What's his name? Yeah.
Yeah. Those movies are good examples of somebody who doesn't follow the source material at all. All these characters happen to have the same names as the comic book, but that's about as far as it goes.
I think they were trying to recapture the 60s camp, and it failed miserably between their choices of cast and design, and they just had crappy stories. I mean, you couldn't care less about anything that was going on.
Well, the thing about the camp, if they wanted to do that, that's fine. What makes that Batman movie that we like so much with, what's his name?
Christian Bale?
No. The old one. Adam West.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's low budget. They follow the camp. They go with what they have. They went with their strengths on that, which is a lot of gags and camp. It's not taking itself seriously. The biggest problem I have with those older Batman movies like the George Clooney and all that shit, they took themselves seriously. And you're looking at it, and it's so cartoony. And they're trying to act up to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, those were terrible. Even the 60s Batman with Adam West and Burt Ward, that was aping the comics that were only maybe, 15, 20 years prior?
Yeah.
You know, it was still the same tone. So I think that in and of itself still worked. But it's like you said, Lefty, it's just when they still take that campy feel or an attempt to recapture it and then play serious against it, that it just completely falls apart.
Oh, exactly. I mean, these were horribly acted, horribly cast.
The only good casting was Jack Nicholson as the Joker in the first one.
And you know what? After I watched that movie a second time, I didn't like it.
Oh, really?
I agree with you on that, Lefty. I went bananas the first time I saw it, and then I watched it again. Yep. I'm like,
me too.
Why? Why did I like this?
That's exactly the way I felt about it. I mean, because it was the first time you see it. Oh, this is cool. They got the right feel. You know, it's all this. And
yeah, but it didn't age well at all, though.
No. It did not age well. And it's just, I went back and looked at it, and it's just like, why the hell did I like it? I mean, what is there to like about this movie? Then you see the Christian Bale one, which I still am not sold on Christian Bale as Batman. But what's his name that played the Joker?
Heath Ledger, yeah. Fantastic.
Awesome. That was worth the price of admission for me on that movie. You know, but Christian Bale, all he can do is talk like this. I'm just like, come on now.
Well, he was better than Michael Keaton.
He played the character well, and he could play it with a level of seriousness that fit the tone of the character as presented in that story. Especially in The Dark Knight, though. I don't know what it is. I don't know whether it was the change in the costume or he decided to ham this up a little bit, but he sounded like he had a head cold.
Well, I think he overdid it. I mean, it was just, I just not sold on him in that. It's just,
but that still was better than all four of those Tim Burton era movies.
Oh yeah.
Oh no. Did he make all four of those?
No, he made the first two. Joel Schumacher made the second two.
Oh, okay.
I figured Burton was still producer.
But I think he ended up apologizing. I think he ended up apologizing for the fourth one, the one with George Clooney. I think even he knew he'd gone too far with that.
that was
oh my gosh.
Those were getting as bad as the Superman 4 Quest for Peace.
I saw those recently. I actually sat down and watched them on Netflix.
You have a serious masochistic streak.
Yes,
you know
you
that?
Do, man.
Oh, I love bad movies. They're great. You know? Oh my God, this has led to so much other discussion because I'm sitting here just flashing, thinking about all these movies that's come out that are just, if you just sit down and make you a list, and you'll realize how many reboots have been done, and you realize how little imagination is left anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, a good example, do y'all remember the Sissy Spacek movie Carrie?
Yeah.
Okay. Stephen King story. I believe, now I'm not talking about sequels. I'm talking about actual reboots. I think this movie's been rebooted at least four times in the past 5 years.
Oh, you're kidding.
I really, if I'm not mistaken, I will have to look this up and maybe post something on the blog about it. But I keep remembering, but like every couple of years, it seems like Carrie's coming out again.
Well, see, they are coming out with a Carrie reboot, and it's going to star Chloe Moretz, who I think would play an interesting character of Carrie. However, why do it? I mean, it is, it's not a bad movie.
No, they did the same thing with Psycho, 10 years ago?
Yeah, but they filmed that pretty much real for real, though, didn't they?
Yeah, it was a shot-for-shot remake of the Alfred Hitchcock, and I didn't why?
Yeah, I don't want just to film it in color, I guess?
I guess.
I really don't get that. I guess part of it is that they feel like they need new effects or a current actor to draw in money, but people who have any appreciation of film. I'm going to sound like a snob here, but I don't care. People who have a real appreciation of film, they're going to go seek out the original, and they should, encourage others to do the same. I really wish that more theaters had classic runs of stuff. It would be superb.
I do too.
Yeah, I think they'd get a bigger audience than they realize too.
Yeah, they might. Yeah, they probably would. I would go.
Well, here now,
and I hardly ever go to the movies.
Yeah, exactly. Now here's a good example of a movie. What I don't understand sometimes is with this is the timing of things. A good example: The Amazing Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. Okay, they just had those last three movies in the past what, 5-6 years.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, the third one was a floating turd wrapped around a big old pile of just god-awful mess.
You're talking the Tobey Maguire ones, right?
Yes. But they made this new one. They rebooted it within 5 years of the first one being made. Why?
I asked the same question, but I saw it, mm-hmm. and it's not bad. I was really expecting to be let down by the trailers that I watched, and I think it was because the stuff that they released for the cut for the trailer was the footage that didn't have like its final render or stuff, because the lizard just looked stupid in the trailer. I mean, it looked completely ridiculous and utterly unbelievable, like it was a cartoon stuck with real life actor, like Cool World or some crap like that. But I watched it, and it's really not bad. It's not the greatest superhero film I've ever seen by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not bad. And I think character wise, strictly speaking about Parker, they stuck more to him being a wiseacre, especially in costume, than they did in any of the Toby films.
Hmm. Well, like that Spider-Man 2 is my favorite one of those.
I thought that was a great action.
Really?
Spider-Man 2, I think, had some colossal story flaws. I think its casting was good. The effects were genius. I mean, that was great mm-hmm. stuff with Ox Arms.
You're right. You're
but
right.
Yeah. It just, I think it had some story flaws. And I think it was, I think Raimi, I'm not going to say he was phoning it in or anything, but I think he was just kind of like, you know, yeah, I got to get this one done. The third one, he was definitely like, you know, yeah, guys, go do whatever, dance, sing. I don't give a shit. I'm getting a paycheck. But the first one, though, really felt to me like he was dealing with a character that he loved. And it's not a bad movie. It's not a great movie, but it's not a bad movie. But it's also not mediocre either. It's pretty good. Even, yeah. You know, like or hate Tobey Maguire.
I'm going to reiterate my theory about comic book films and their sequels. The first one is almost always the best, and then there's a precipitous decline after that. And you could definitely see that in the Spider-Man films. Mm-hmm. I'm probably going to get flamed for this. I think Sam Raimi is a really overrated director. I don't see why he has the following he does. The first Spider-Man film I thought was pretty good. I didn't like the way it ended. I thought it ended really cheesily. That's the only film I think he's ever made that I've ever seen that I've ever liked. I just don't like his films.
Oh, okay.
I don't get why Army of Darkness is so popular. I didn't like that movie. But it's just me. I don't know. Put your flamethrowers right. away. Just my opinion.
I can accept that. I can definitely accept that. Because Sam Raimi makes Sam Raimi movies just like John Carpenter makes John Carpenter movies.
And like Kevin Smith makes Kevin Smith movies, yes.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little bit better than Kevin Smith movies. At least some of his later ones. But at any rate, I can agree with that assessment. I mean, he seems like an odd choice to do that sort of thing. I wonder if he lobbied for it too.
He might have. And maybe like you said, you pointed out he told the story he wanted to tell in the first one, and then the rest was just paychecks. So I don't know.
Sure. Well, see, the thing about me with superhero movies, and this might be going off topic a little bit, I understand why they have to do an origin story, but being a fan of these characters, I don't want to see that again. You know what I mean? I've read it 30 times over in the fucking comics.
Yeah, but I mean, you have to introduce the character for everyone who hasn't read the books, because I've seen works that have obviously been done for people who know the source material, and for anyone who doesn't, you're left out in the cold. It becomes hard to follow and to care about the characters, because it tends to be a rapidly, oh, well, here's, you know, Johnny X or whatever the guy's name is, and all of a sudden he's in this ridiculous situation and you don't have the background. So, I mean, the origin story is one of the hardest stories to do because it's typically the most boring, but you have to lay all that pipe in order to do your successive stories.
Oh, I totally understand why they do it. This is just a personal opinion as someone who likes these characters. It's just a wasted story for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand.
I have to disagree with you because I think that's usually the best part of the story, in my opinion. Uh-huh. But maybe I'm going to these movies for different things than you are. I think you're going for the action and the
I think I'm mainly
going for the story.
Okay.
That's just, you know, different ways that we approach these films. Go ahead,
I'm sorry.
The first Superman movie, the one with Christopher Reeve.
Yes.
The best part of it to me is the beginning bit where he's doing the Superboy bit, basically.
Right.
I don't think it's as good a movie after he goes to Metropolis. But that's just me.
Right. Well, see, and I'm going to get shot for this. I never liked Christopher Reeve as Superman. I don't think they've cast a good Superman yet.
I think the problem, and we're getting way off topic here, but this is interesting, so let's go with it.
All right, let's go for it.
The problem with Batman and Superman, I think, everybody has their idea of how that character's supposed to be, and nobody's ever quite going to live up to anybody's. Because you say the same thing about Batman. There's never really been a good Batman because he doesn't quite match how you think the character ought to be. There's never really been a good Superman because he doesn't really like things. He doesn't really do like you think he should. I think everybody can probably say that in one form or another. I've seen Christopher Reeve in other movies I thought he was much better in.
Oh, yeah, me too. I like him as an actor. I just thought he was miscast as Superman.
He looked the part. He looked good. I don't necessarily think he was the best actor for it, but I don't really know if there is a best actor for that part.
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of weird looking back on it now. I don't know. I guess everyone here can agree maybe the second one was the best as far as action goes.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you feel that way, Rando?
I do, but I've got a little bit of perspective on that because I've seen the theatrical cut of the second one, and I've gone back and seen the recut that was done on DVD that has the rest of what is the director's name? I can't think of it right now. Did the Lethal Weapon movies. He originally shot Superman 1 and 2 roughly at the same time, and he finished cutting Superman 1 and got it out the door, and it was having such a contentious time with the producers that he walked off after that, and it was up to another director to finish Superman 2. So you get these two vastly different sides of the story. And the way the character is handled, and you can, I mean, if you go back and really focus on the story and the way the movie's presented, in the theatrical cut of Superman 2, it really feels kind of lopsided. You go back and watch the recut that was recently released on DVD, but it a few years ago released on DVD, it becomes a completely different movie because they went back and even cut in a wonderful scene. I mean, there was always that dumbass scene of where Clark Kent falls into the fire. I always thought that was so fucking stupid, even as a kid watching the film. They went back and did a much better scene, and the footage was taken from Christopher Reeve's screen test with Margot Kidder. Oh. And even that was a better scene than what originally ended up in the theatrical cut. In terms of tone and character, that cut, I think, is the superior. But that had to do with interference from the producers.
This is totally new information. I had no idea any of that had happened or that there was a different cut that had been brought to DVD.
I'm glad
you brought this up.
It is much, much better.
Well, I might have to check the DVD one day.
Yeah, I might have to as well.
I'll watch it again. I never liked the way they wrote Clark Kent as this bumbling kind of
goofus. I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, even
he wasn't like that in the comic book.
Even Steve Rogers was a dumbass in the army. They didn't portray that in the film, but back, you know, in the source material, that was his whole thing. It was just the gag of, "Hey, I'm Johnny Dumbfuck, but at night, I'm Colossal Man or whatever." And that was their cover, was to play it stupid as the, you know, you turn on Maxwell Smart in the day and you turn him off at night.
Right.
But that, I mean, that goes into the whole origin story. So many of them are the same because they use the same story elements. But in certain films, like the first Superman film and some others, the origin story, although in terms of getting to the action bits of the movie, which are probably what are sold more than anything else. It becomes the slowest part, but if you think about it, though, that's also probably the part that actually has the most character development and growth. And then everything else after that just becomes the next action piece. Well, who's the next boss to defeat? Who's the next girl to woo or whatever?
Well, okay. I could see that. Yeah, I could see that point. I mean, it's just that I think I'm just – it's like you had mentioned earlier, Poncho. I'm looking at these movies for different things.
Yeah. I don't like action films because I guess I like a story and I like good acting.
Yeah. Sure.
That's probably why I go with my theory that these comic book films tend to decline in quality because they tend to get more and more action oriented as they go along.
Right. Well, I think part of you as a fan, let's say a fan of the comic book, at least this is true in my case, when I was watching The Avengers, I kind of filled in some of the gaps myself. You know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. I was watching the film, because, I mean, that's a pure action film. Is it a great story? No. But it's fun as hell.
Yeah,
I mean,
it is.
It's just a fucking roller coaster ride, and it's just, I love it, you know? And I didn't expect, like, you know, great, great writing for something like that.
Well, no,
you know
I
what
didn't
I mean?
Either going into that. I mean, I was hoping to get a good movie, and I got one, so I was happy.
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, I think it all depends how far you want to really do the good storylines, I guess, because like these, going back to those Batman films, the Tim Burton ones, those are just, I don't know. There's not a good story there when you after you watch it a couple of times.
No.
There's nothing there. You know, it's all, you know, style and no substance.
That's a problem I have with Tim Burton movies in general. They tend to be all style and not a lot of substance.
In terms of this, when he deals with quote unquote real life settings with extraordinary people, I think it falls on its face. When he deals with a pure fantasy on both ends of it in terms of setting and character, that's where he shines. Right. Look at Big Fish.
That's my favorite movie he did.
It's an excellent film.
Mm-hmm. My favorite movie of his is Ed Wood. That's just a personal favorite, but I will readily admit Big Fish is a better film, the best film he ever made.
Yeah, that's a beautiful movie. It really is. Fantastic. That's not... Mm-hmm.
If he's ever remembered for anything, it should be that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
And for once, it didn't have Johnny Depp in it.
That's very true.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, wow. Okay.
This is a great topic.
It is. We could probably stretch out another show, but why don't we move on to something else we were talking about? What are we?
Rando, you said there was something you were saving for the end.
That was the remake of TV.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Almost all TV remakes are shit.
Okay.
End of story. But I wanted to move on because, I mean, we got off topic, but that is totally cool. What are we reading right now? Why don't we move on with that?
Okay.
Sure.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, who wants to start?
I'll go first, I guess.
Okie doke.
Alrighty.
I have been reading history books lately. I go in phases with what I read. The last couple of years, I've been reading a lot of fiction, a lot of literature, but in the last 6 months or so, I've switched back to reading history, which is what I read most of the time. And right now I'm reading a book by David McCullough called The Greater Journey, which is about Americans traveling to Paris in the 19th century, traveling and living in Paris in the 19th century. I'm about 100 pages into it. I don't quite have an opinion of it yet. It's a hard book to describe.
Doesn't he normally do Civil War work? Or am I mistaking him?
You probably recognize the name because he narrated the Ken Burns Civil War series.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I don't think he's written a book about the Civil War. He's written a lot of – he's one of my favorite history writers. In fact, the book I read before this one was a book he did, a book of essays he wrote called Brave Companions, which was excellent. But he wrote a very good biography of Harry Truman. He wrote an excellent book called 1776, which was about – obviously, the year 1776. And he's written – I've got his biography of John Adams, which he won a Pulitzer Prize for, but I haven't finished it yet. I have to go back and start it again. But He's one of my favorite history authors, and his writing is very accessible for a non-historian.
Oh, okay. That's great.
There's two types of history writing that I've found. There is stuff that is written for everybody, and there's stuff that's written for scholars. And as you can imagine, the scholarly stuff, while it can be very interesting if you don't mind the language, it can be very obtuse. It's not for everybody. But I got my degree in history, so I don't mind it. But I wouldn't. There's a lot of authors I really like. I don't know if I'd recommend their books to just anybody. But David McCullough is a history author I'd recommend to just about anybody.
Okay, great.
So that's what I've been reading.
Wow, well, mine's going to be a really step down from this. I'm reading comic books. I'm reading right now some comics that Poncho actually found for me at the flea market?
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, the old Marvel Essentials. I had mentioned these on the show before. He got me two Power Men ones. And then I got Captain Marvel. And the last one is... I can see the cover right now.
I can't remember what it was offhand.
I can't read either. But right now I'm reading the Power Man comic from the early 70s. So I'm not really I guess I'm kind of, you know.
You're not as highbrow as I am.
Yeah, exactly. This is the dumbass portion of the what are you reading section. So that's what I'm reading right now.
How are they?
Oh, they're great, actually. They're very good. They're what you expect from 70s comic books.
Oh, boy.
I mean, you know. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's not, you know, it's probably not as sophisticated as today's, but they're fun, and it's a nostalgia trip for me. So I enjoy it.
Cool.
Okay. Now, what about you, Rando?
I'm in the same low level as you. I'm mostly reading manga. I'm in the middle, well, maybe about the middle third of the book The Night Watch by Sergei Lukyanenko, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. I believe the original Russian title is Nochnoi Dozor, and that is the one about the two different factions of vampires, shape-shifting vampires, I should say, who were vying for dominance. They've been fighting for centuries, and the fighting had gone on so long that they have a shaky truce. And the one set of vampires has created something called the Night Watch to monitor the dark, so to speak, vampires. The dark vampires have a competing group to monitor the other ones called Day Watch. And that leads into the next book, which is called Day Watch. And then I think the other one's called Dark Watch or something. I can't remember. It's a trilogy, as most of these things are. So I'm kind of in the middle of that.
I had no idea there was such a thing as Russian manga.
Well, this is actually a novel. This is the novel that the Timur Bekmambetov movies were based on. But the manga I'm currently reading is, I'm in the middle of two or three series right now. One that I got on a lark and loved so much that I bought as many volumes as I could of it. It was called Rosario and Vampire. And it is about, the setup is kind of silly. It's a monster school. Hidden by a magic barrier. Yes, I can hear the entire internet laughing right now. It's hidden by a magic barrier.
That's not much different from Harry Potter's.
Agreed. Premise. There's a lot of elements lifted from various things, but it's about a human boy who mistakenly gets entered into this monster school and has to figure out how to survive. Really, because the monster school has been set up. Because the monsters are concerned that if they really show themselves, they're very, very powerful, but the humans vastly outnumber them. So the monster school really is a means to teach the monsters how to coexist and survive in a sea of non-monsters. But this human boy ends up getting transferred to it, and he befriends a vampire wearing a Rosario seal. And he apparently is the only one able to remove this seal, which awakens the vampire's inner power. And did I mention that this vampire is a girl?
No.
Hence you have the love angle that eventually works its way in. But he ends up befriending two witches and a succubus and a snow fairy. And they have to deal with various plot elements, including a nefarious organization bent on destroying all the humans to make a world only for monsters. So it's.
Have you ever read Harry Potter?
Have you ever read X-Men?
Yeah.
The
Brotherhood of Evil Mutants all over again. It's very, very similar, but the thing that's really striking about this book is that it strikes a very nice tone between the romance, the action, and the comedy, which it walks a fairly fine line between all three of those. But the other is that the artist for the book draws excellent and very challenging monster designs, beautiful in work, and the work he puts into the detail of the faces for these characters is absolutely superb. Very stylized, but not the ridiculous stuff where everybody's got eyes as big as saucers and their mouth covers up half their face all the time. Very, very good work in terms of writing for the type of story they're trying to present and the art style. Very, very good. I was pleasantly surprised by that. I got into it when they were already maybe six or seven volumes out. I bought the first two and was instantly hooked, and I had to get the rest of them immediately. And at $10 a pop, you know, that's a significant investment.
Yeah, no kidding.
And the other one I've been reading.
So you need to get me to find them at the flea market for you for $5 a piece. Like I think
exactly.
Well, I've already caught up. I'm at the new stuff now. So I've also been reading a series called Negima, which is a silly story done by Ken Akamatsu, who's also responsible for Love Hina, if anyone's familiar with that.
I've heard of Love Hina, yes.
It's slapsticky. It's silly. And for what it is, it's a fine story. Not great, but it's comedic, and that's what they're going for. So, but again, it's another one where the design work is quite stellar, especially in terms of backgrounds and setting and overall arching plot. It's not bad. The last one I've been reading, the early volumes of this are much better than the later volumes, is a book called Yotsuba. It's actually, the full title is Yotsuba and every story is Yotsuba and something. And it all centers around this 5-year-old girl who is an orphan who was basically taken in by a Japanese man who works as a translator. And it's just her everyday adventures. It's a slice of life thing. And it's handled in terms of this character, Yotsuba, who just finds everything fascinating. And it's especially if you pick up like the first 5 volumes, that's really enough. Everything after that is just kind of a little bit humdrum, unfortunately. But the first 5 volumes, you read them, and it's like you rediscover things that you have forgotten, maybe the first time you discovered something that this kid is discovering. And the guy who did this is somehow really able to capture the wonder of discovery from a child's point of view. And that's a rare thing, especially lately, in a story, to be able to capture a sense of wonder about the story. Yeah. Whether it be print, manga, TV, or movie, a sense of wonder is a rare thing to have.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, cool. That sounds good. That sounds really good.
All righty. Well, I guess we've about run out of time.
Yeah, we have for tonight. We didn't reach a couple of things we wanted to, but that's okay. I think we had a good discussion otherwise.
Yeah.
And I think the reboot issue can be revisited.
Yeah.
Many times.
They're going to keep making them.
Unfortunately, yes.
All right, guys. Well, I guess we covered some pretty good areas here. We got a little off topic, but I think we had some good conversation. Anything else you guys want to add before we sign out for tonight?
The B-Movie Review is coming back next week, right?
That's very true. The B-Movie this time is an old...
It's your turn?
Yes, it's my turn. Hopefully I don't beat everybody up as much as Poultrygeist, but... the next movie I've picked is Ricky O, The Story of Ricky, which is based on, it's a Chinese movie based on a manga. It's completely over the top. It's silly gory, and hopefully it's silly fun.
All right.
We hope.
All right. And then we're going to throw you a little curveball next week. We're going to go and do a little current events talk. A little weird news. Going to finally get to my rant about Yahoo and surprising celebrity roles. So I think it's going to be a good show. And keep an eye out on the blog, because we're going to have some posts coming up next week about different ideas. And we're hoping you're listening and enjoying everything. Guys, let them know where they can find us.
That's right. Our blog is at mlctaskforce.com. And a shout out to our most recent followers. We thank you very much. Stay tuned. Stay tuned for the ride.
You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/midlifecrisistaskforce. And that's about it.
I think that's a wrap, guys. We're going to see everybody next week.
Y'all have a good week.
Take care.
All right. Take care.